You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95BFM.
Hello. Indeed. It's not
good afternoon.
Oh, well, hey, it worked.
Nice to talk to you. Hey, yeah, well done you.
Thank you very much. So we are joined by Chris Pink, who is the MP for Helensville, I believe. Am I right in saying that?
Quite right.
And very the good. Well done. Spokesperson for courts?
Yes, indeed. Yes,
ah,
well, hey. For courts as well as the MP for this area. So feel very, very lucky to have those roles and great to be talking with you today.
Indeed, it's a big array of responsibilities, but we've got a few different topics today to discuss.
Great.
We're looking at the zero carbon bill, as it's kind of been relabeled. I think it's called the Carbon Amendments Act. And then we're also kind of transitioning into the car tax, which kind of fits in with that as well.
Yep.
And then perhaps a few other topics towards the end, looking perhaps at the review of the defence estate and maybe as well at business confidence, if we have time. So I was looking through the social medias that you possess, as one does.
Oh dear.
Indeed.
What have I said now?
Don't worry. Nothing too alarming. But you made a kind of like a relatively long, well-structured discussion around the a certain amendment within the new kind of zero carbon bill. And I wanted just to kind of start by opening the floor to your thoughts on what the kind of zero carbon bill is at the moment in your kind of view.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think the starting point is to say that National's position is that we understand and acknowledge that the climate's changing and that there's things that we need to do to protect the environment. So, and actually what that means in a political sense is that it's important that as much as possible, the political parties get on board with each other, understand that there's a certain amount we can all agree on, and the best way to go forward is actually to agree what we can and use that as a framework for policy so that what we don't get is every 3 or 6 or 9 years when governments change, a sort of back and forth of different approaches and so on. So our starting point has been to say, well, look, the current government's come in and has made some noises about particular policy settings that they want, and we've said that if we can get on board with that, you know, provided that sort of ticks boxes as far as we're concerned, and actually we'll have the good outcomes that we expect and there won't be unintended consequences and so on, then we can and will. So this bit of legislation, and you note that it's had a couple of different names, it's sort of really, there's two key bits to it. One is to say that we're going to have a new organisation called a Climate Commission, I think it's called. Sort of check, shouldn't I, before I started speaking, but in any case, something like that, and it pretty much will do what it says on the tin, which is that it's set up to consider policy in the climate change space with a mandate for sort of technical advice and recommendations that can be made, you know, so that a bunch of politicians aren't sort of standing around saying, well, what do you reckon in terms of the science, and sort of discussing the technical aspects, which we can probably rightly delegate to those who are pretty, well qualified in the space. So that's the first bit. And then the second bit is that as it stands, the bill that was introduced to Parliament has some specific targets, including in relation to, nitrous oxide, and we supported that one without boring us the detail, but that's fine as far as we're concerned. But methane, which is a little bit interesting from the point of view that it's relates to the agricultural sector and, you know, a big part of the economy, which we don't want to crash because then that has implications for health and education and all the other spending we like to do. Anyway, so long story short, the bill already set the target for that. That's actually beyond what the scientific advice has said is going to have any effect in terms of warming. So we'd like to see that target reduced, but actually probably more to the point, that original bit of the bill that I was talking about, where we have a climate commission set up to do things like set targets, that would be really the more appropriate place for that to work.
So from that, I've kind of got two questions. You mentioned the kind of emphasis that New Zealand has on agriculture and its economy.
Yeah.
So what economic changes or what changes to support agriculture would the National Party or you even personally like to see to be able to transition to a green economy, which we know we need to have, and also still support what is a major industry in Aotearoa?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really good question, because what you've touched on is the need for balancing, you know, the fact that we've got an important industry for our economy, and it's sort of a major part of our way of life, but also the need to be responsible in the area of the environment. But I think the key thing to remember is actually that we don't need to have a complete either-or approach. And to some extent, we're balancing them and we're playing them off against each other. But actually, probably a better way to look at it is that to some extent, these things can work hand in hand. So maybe, you know, our brand goes more towards saying, well, yes, we are going to keep farming, but we're going to do it in the most sustainable and environmentally friendly way possible. And whereas other political parties have tended to focus a little bit on the volume and say, well, you know, we need fewer cows or we need a lower volume, then actually, maybe there's something where we say, well, it's actually the quality and exactly how we do it that we need to look at. So actually the focus then goes on research and development. So, for example, we might have the same number of cows standing around in a field emitting methane, if I can put it like that. But if the feed that they've got is such that they're producing less of that, then that's sort of a sensible place for us to go. And then part of that discussion then becomes about biotechnology. AKA genetic modification, and I mean that's always been a little bit controversial as long as that concept's been around, but we're pretty open-minded about the fact that, look, we do need to sort of consider ways that we can do things better for the planet and, you know, again, for the economy, and actually support both of those. So let's look at new ways that that can be done.
Certainly. Do you think it's perhaps too late to be waiting for new developments to save us from what is a climate emergency, when we have other fixes that could possibly be implemented instead?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Can you repeat the question?
So do you think that, so if we're looking at genetic modification, we're obviously going to have a delay in the ability to implement that into practice, as we've seen with a lot of other technologies, even with hybrid cars to an extent. Do you think that we will be too late to implement these changes by the time that we're ready and they are ready for practice?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the research is going on right now. In fact, earlier this week, I met with some people in my constituency who are doing some really interesting work in this area. I can't share the detail because I haven't been authorised to sort of pass that on. But, you know, this stuff has been going on for a while. This is not something that I've come up with today, obviously. And I think, you know, some of the technology is already available out there. We've just got to sort of think about how we, support that into industry as fast as possible. And, you know, there is a timing aspect, as you say, because it can take a while for these things to roll out. But really, from the point of view of government, it's about encouraging that work in the first place and then having as few obstacles as possible for that to be rolled out. So partly it's the research and development, but it's also having regulations that actually don't preclude this new kind of technology because we've got some sort of fear about, you know, biotechnology or what the future might look like, and the fact that, you know, we've done things one way for, you know, hundreds of years, and actually, you know, we are in a different environment, you know, pun intended, and we do need to sort of be a bit open-minded about what's out there. So that's a position, for example, where National and the Greens are, you know, part company, and we sort of feel we can be a bit more expensive in our thinking because we need to, essentially.
Certainly. That's quite a kind of heady way of perhaps approaching this climate change thing, rather than perhaps more simple fixes which have been mooted by other political parties or groups. In your release, you quoted George Orwell around the climate emergency, saying that one has to belong to the intelligentsia to believe things like that. No ordinary man could be such a fool. Do you think that this is a kind of intelligentsia solution to climate change, where there are practical applications that can be put into practice now?
Oh, I think we've got to, we shouldn't discount anything that is going to be helpful. So whether that might be, you know, immediate, practical, short-term effects, absolutely, but alongside those sort of longer-range and more nuanced approaches that I've been talking about. I think what we've got to be a little bit careful of is that we don't sort of act in a way that's inconsistent, and I'm trying to be kind about the way that I'm putting this, in terms of, you know, politicians at local and central government level who want to declare a climate emergency but don't seem to be prepared to do anything that would actually go along with what would take place in a in what we generally think of as an emergency. I mean, for example, if we've got non-essential air travel being undertaken by politicians who say that there is some sort of emergency, it's sort of hard to know whether they are being hypocritical about saying that others should take strong measures, but they themselves shouldn't, on the one hand, or is it not that big a deal after all? I mean, you can't sort of have your cake and eat it too. So to sort of be alarmist about it but not activist, I think, is a little bit disingenuous. So I think, I think a bit of a sensible approach in a way that George Orwell would have approved of is the responsibility of us all.
I think that's a fair enough comment. To give context to that quote, of course, because it's important to do so, you were discussing the perhaps daft suggestions that are made in some parts of the bill or by the IPCC, who is the body that is designated to come up with solutions or comment on climate science. You specifically focus in on biomass, which is a renewable form of energy, and you say it's a bit of a controversial area that you and Greenpeace both strongly agree on. And you say that planting more trees is a great idea, using the same amounts, vast amounts of space to plant trees, only to cut them down and burn them, though, is ineffective, a waste of space, and borderline insane. When discussing renewable energies and biomass, why did you choose to specifically focus on tree planting and felling when there are other forms of biomass that could be more productive or just as productive?
Oh, well, look, I mean, there's a whole, you know, it's a whole complex area, and I probably, you know, I wouldn't want to give the impression that there's only one, you know, one player on the biomass field, for example. But what I do find a bit sort of short-sighted is when there's a lot of talk about, forestation in a way that's supposedly going to solve all our woes. And if we're planting out land that's actually useful for growing food that we all need to eat, then that's sort of a bit counterproductive and short-sighted. And to the extent that it reflects the government's political goals of planting a billion trees, because this is something that Shane Jones has plucked out of somewhere, and as opposed to saying, well, what's the best approach for us as a nation overall, and actually for the other parts of the world that we sell food to, you know, the reality is that some places are better for growing, you know, whether that's crops or livestock, than others. And so, you know, we shouldn't sort of cut off our nose to spite our face because we've got some sort of artificial, politically motivated target that's been put out there.
If our face is aging or falling apart anyway, do we have the time to be, like, always long-focused, like, in the long term? Do we not have to some extent, be pragmatic and short-sighted in our developments?
Yeah, I think it's a fair... I think you've put that really well, I think. But again, I'd say it needs to be both and. It's not either or. It's not just the long term or just the short term kind of solutions. But again, you can tell how serious people are by their actions. And so, again, you know, if we say that there's an emergency you know, but we're not prepared to act upon it, then I find that sort of hard to take seriously, the views that are put forward for long-term or short-term solutions. You know, it's got to be in accordance with the science. It's got to be what's actually going to reduce emissions and not, as with the oil and gas ban, actually increase them. Counterintuitive as it sounds, because, you know, we end up using the same amount of energy because people still like having hot showers and don't like walking around in the dark. But, you know, we end up importing dirty coal from overseas rather than in relatively clean energy from onshore. So, again, always just the long-term view as well as the short-term fix. It's got to be actually what works, not the unintended consequences, and it's got to be genuine and match our actions. So the walk and the talk got to be the same.
Most certainly. Speaking of imports and finding a balance of long-term and short-term, another thing you've been rather vocal about on social media is kind of the car tax, is kind of what it's been labelled in shorthand, and that's talking about the Feebate scheme, which kind of will balance the import or offer additional taxes to cars that aren't as energy efficient in order to subsidise the importing of vehicles that are more energy efficient. What do you have to say about this kind of scheme?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One is that it's good to incentivise good practices, and disincentivising bad practices a carrot and stick approach is not unreasonable in itself. But the reality is that in terms of vehicles that are on New Zealand's roads that are older, what we've got at the moment is a scenario where actually it'll cost a lot more to replace the vehicle that that the family drives around in, and so we'll incentivise people to hang on to their vehicles longer, perhaps, than they should. That's just the design of the scheme, because it will apply to imports going forward and not currently. But actually, the other thing that's probably more significant is the philosophy underlying this scheme. They've said that it's about changing behaviours and allowing people to make a choice that is better for the environment. And, you know, so we see extra costs on cars that aren't so low emission. But the reality is that for some people, actually, that's not really much of a choice. There are vehicles that are legitimately larger because, for example, they drive on more dodgy rural roads. And that's something that's important to my constituents here in Helensville, so I'm going to be a little bit parochial about that. But also, to the extent that we're saying that people should be in electric vehicles, well, that's great. But if the infrastructure isn't provided, namely if there aren't charging stations, and if we're talking about parts of the world in which there are large distances that people do need to travel by car because there isn't public transport, then that needs to be part of the whole package as well. And that's before even you get to things like saying, well, what about in a power cut, where we had almost 2 weeks, people in my electorate just over a year ago suffered following a major storm, you know, and in the context of climate change, if we say that these things are going to be more often and we're going to lose power more frequently as a result, until such time as we put all the lines underground, which isn't going to be in the next short while, I can assure you, then what's the plan B for that? So, I'm not saying that that the idea of providing carrots and stick for cleaner cars isn't a good thing in itself, but the way they've worked it out and the lack of thinking that's gone around the whole scheme and actually what that would mean on the ground for people is just, from my point of view, and excuse me being a little bit political here, but it's sort of symptomatic of the government's general approach, which is good intentions, but not well executed, not well thought through.
Do you think it's perhaps slightly too short-term this time rather than slightly too long-term rather than short-term enough for a solution that New Zealand needs?
Well, I think I'd probably characterise it more as going about it the wrong way, from the point of view that if you want to have more vehicles that are, let's say, cleaner, just for the sake of shorthand, then a way to get them here would be actually something that I know Simon Bridges and his time as Transport Minister was keen to get onto. And, you know, if we run another term, hopefully he would have, but, you know, history shows that's not the case. But I'm hopeful that now with Simon being the leader of the opposition, it's something we'd have a strong focus on in government from 2020 on if we were fortunate enough to win, was actually a scheme where we would have government fleets would be predominantly electric. And what we'd then have is, the government's buying power at scale, be able to absorb that extra cost. We then have more EVs driving around the place, and then when they get translated from the government fleet out to the private fleet, when those are flogged off second hand after however many years that is, then there'll be more in circulation. So gradually we'd sort of green the fleet that way. So anyway, just a different approach, but in the meantime we don't think it's the right approach to be penalising people who already don't need that extra few thousand on top of all the other extra costs, such as the fuel tax and the excise level that's been sort of chucked onto motorists.
Right. So, but that would be, of course, limited to those within government and those vehicles only, would it not?
Oh, well, yes. But my point was really, and maybe I didn't make it clearly enough, is that what happens is when government cars, of a certain, X number of years old, they get sold out to the private, just privately, and other people end up driving them. And then we have, the government then buy new electrics. So you'd have an influx of electric vehicles throughout the whole, New Zealand fleet, government and non-government alone, by sort of using the government to do that initial step to dip the toe in the water and get them in bulk.
Right, but so how often would they be getting imports in of these new cars? Wouldn't by some point they all be technologically outdated as well, especially as new hybrid technology is developed? Wouldn't we face similar issues as...
Oh, yeah, possibly. Yeah, you know, that's a fair point. And I'm not saying we should hang our hat completely on electric vehicles, but the same principle would apply whether it's hydrogen or, you know, whatever else is out there. And I mean, I have people come and tell me that hydrogen is the new best thing and you guys are all wasting your time even talking about electric vehicles whatsoever. I don't know. I'm not sort of claiming to be scientifically literate enough to know just how far away that technology is available. But I think we can be optimistic that in the electric space and also, you know, hydrogen and other technologies that become available, you know, we will get better at doing these things and we will have better battery capacity and holding power and so forth. So I think, you know, things are moving in the right direction. We just need to sort of not have anyone too hard hit, I think, especially in an uneven way that doesn't reflect real choices.
Indeed.
In the meantime. So there's lots of things we can do, basically.
Yes, fingers crossed this optimism proves viable. Thank you. That's all we're going to have time for today. Thank you so much for your time.
Good one.
And
thank you very much.
Have
good
a
one.
Good Great rest chat. Of your day.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.